This week on the line, we're welcoming Sherry Yard. Sherry Yard is a dear friend, and she is a culinary genius. If we can get 1% of what she's got in that brain to come out for your ears, we are all going to be deeply thankful.
Our first pastry chef guest, and certainly the most memorable. Sherry is a ball of energy, and she's going to tell us everything we need to know about baker's percentages, what it was like working with Wolfgang Puck, and what it's like now running her Manhattan Beach Cafe. If you're lucky enough to live in that neighborhood, go see her and get some of those sweet treats.
Sherry Yard knows more about the art and science of baking and running a culinary business than anybody we have ever spoken to. We would all be well served to listen in and pay attention because not only is she just a genius, she's a deeply kind person. She's a lovely human.
You're going to love this high energy conversation with Sherry Yard on the line.
We're very, very, very deeply excited to welcome Sherry Yard. Sherry has a long and storied career as a celebrated pastry chef, culinary educator, author, entrepreneur, and generally wonderful person.
Yes.
The title pastry chef elicits romantic images of an aproned, matronly, or perhaps avuncular figure. A sweets chef working in the back of a restaurant, kitchen, or pastry shop frosting cupcakes. But in Sherry's case, that image couldn't be farther from the reality of her role. Sherry spent 20 years running the baked side of Wolfgang Puck's half-billion-dollar culinary empire. She's built, managed, and overseen bakery programs around the world, including freestanding restaurants, multi-unit hotels, airport kiosks, distribution centers, commissary production, frozen and retail operations, to name a few of her jobs. So wow. She might just be mixing bagels these days, but that's because that's what she wants to do. Sherry has been awarded every accolade available, including multiple James Beard Awards, for her work in restaurants and as a best-selling author. She's spent countless hours on television as a coach and judge, but of all of her incredible accomplishments, the most impressive part is that she's done it all with a broad smile, an extraordinary sense of hospitality. Ask anyone in the industry a complicated baking or pastry related question, something beyond their depth of knowledge, and inevitably, you'll be referred back to Sherry. She's the Yoda of pastry, and she is always willing to help.
I love that.
Sherry was instrumental in the development of my pizza dough program and remains on speed dial for whenever I get in a bind. That is the truth. I've never been blessed to know anybody who is so busy and sought after, yet available to help and willing to be there for you. So thank you so much. Your generosity is legendary. Her generosity is legendary, and she examples it.
Oh my God, no, you are beyond kind. I'm blushing.
Yeah.
What an amazing introduction.
That was a...
You're very kind. Thank you so much. And you forgot one thing.
What's that?
Your friend.
And a friend.
Aww.
And a friend.
Yeah, your friend.
Yeah.
Thank
and
you for being here.
These microphones are in between me and the food.
And if, and if you're just listening and only listening and not watching, you cannot see what is in front of us. The magical spread of bagels and Danish and muffins and cream cheese and butter and salmon and champagne.
Champagne, cheers.
Cheers.
Our muffins are spectacular.
And not, we always like this to remain evergreen, but just so you know, it's 9:30 in the morning here.
Yeah, it's 9:30 in the morning in Los Angeles, which is an appropriate hour.
Very appropriate time for
pizza. And but Sherry only, came only, in with her basket of goodies, a literal basket of goodies. Mm. And this is, like Dan said, exemplifies who you are.
You're very kind.
Yeah. And the amount of work that you do and have done over the years is just unmatched. It's unmatched. Who else can you say has
Wolfgang?
Done anything like you? No. He's lucky to have had you.
You know, you're very, very kind.
And does he still have you? Now tell us, are you
still working
with him in any capacity?
Well, we're, you know, family for life.
Right.
So same thing, speed dial, phone calls. And oh, by the way, he's... Edward, my husband's patient, so my husband's a dentist.
Oh, that's
so
he'll that's always right. be in the phone.
So if you ever notice those amazing pearly whites,
mm-hmm.
we know.
Now that's the secret. Yeah.
I think I have poppy seeds in mine right now.
Yeah.
I'm like having a very hard time not just geeking out and talking about what you're doing here on like a deeply technical level, because these are really special pastries. They're very special pastries. And the thing that I'm like really shocked by is how deeply brown and colored they are, and this like incredible
gorgeous
smell that they have. Colored but they're flavor, not burnt. How do you make flavor. Stuff brown but not burnt, like so dark brown?
You know, it's just like when you're doing a steak. There's really, it's all, you know, the same thing. You want to get good char on something and yet still keep it moist in the center. So it's all about understanding your oven most of the time, right?
And sure.
Goodness, sometimes you're in a deck oven, sometimes you're in a convection oven, sometimes you're in a, I don't know, a microwave. I've been put in all sorts of places. So it's just a matter of, you know, adjusting and understanding the leavening in some things. Like the muffin has baking powder, baking soda, the, I call it a Winky, the banana Winky here with chocolate, milk chocolate filled inside, you know, different temperature as well. You know, that one just has BP, baking powder in it, yeast in the bun. And then what do I want from the bun? Here's the drill. Like right now, I'm just having so much fun because I live in Manhattan Beach and I have a little shop around the corner from my house. During COVID, someone lost this little, it's micro space. It's 350 square feet.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about it. It's a coffee shop, correct?
It's a coffee shop. And, you know, I found a local roaster that I work with, Offset, and they make the coffee. And then every day I wake up in the morning and ask the neighbors, well, the day before I ask them, what do you feel like, you know, I should make? And some things, if I took it up the menu, like the bagels, I would be, you know, thrown into the ocean, which is just a couple of blocks away. And so then I just make different things. So instead they want a banana. Actually, tomorrow I'm making a bran muffin and some sort of peanut butter cookie because there's someone staying in an Airbnb that next door that said, oh, I'd love atomic, I call it atomic muffin.
Is there, it just, is like the word out there that people are, and is it
challenging? It's my neighbors, no.
No one knows.
And you right, just, so we're not going to tell anybody who's listening to this global podcast.
it's a special thing, you know.
Well, we know who you are when you come from outside the neighborhood. You better be wearing flip-flops and a like, beer ball t-shirt. And,
she's got frozen bagels in the window.
And then we know that you're in our neighborhood.
Well, then, so the visitor can't ask for, they can't really request something the next day, but the neighbors can.
The neighbors can, or someone saying at the Airbnb. It happens. I had up until a couple of weeks ago, I had a list where I just said, put your telephone number down. I'll text you when I'm making it. And so I've done everything from bublinky, which is more of a Russian style bagel, to goodness, you just name it. I'm just making it for fun.
Now, Dan, when you said that Sherry was hospitable, I mean, this goes above and beyond. You're getting requests and you're making them. Like,
well,
you must have thousands.
Don't you want to be challenged?
Thousands like of requests. Now, somebody of your stature should be sitting on that beach,
gosh,
having somebody
no.
make pastry for
I'm,
you at
I'm
this
too
point.
I'm too Irish Catholic. I'll be.
The guilt? Is the guilt getting you?
I'll be burned to a crisp. I'll be like one of those potatoes, a crispy potato by the time
I
finish.
I mean, you've had an illustrious career. Is there any, obviously baking is cathartic for you. It's a
yes.
zen place. It's a therapy.
Yes.
But when do you relax? When do you get to chill out? I mean, you've done so much.
Oh, I'm so, oh, please. Oh, what would we do? We all need purpose, right?
Right.
We all need purpose. Everyone needs purpose. I think most of the time, you know, being in the restaurant business in Beverly Hills, often I would hear, you know, someone say, oh, my son or my daughter. And I said, give him a purpose.
Yes.
Give him a broom. Let him sweep. You know, we need something to do. You need to, like, I have more energy when I walk in. This morning, a gentleman said, I'm from Venice, and I happened to be surfing last week, and I came up here, and it's the best, I'm not bragging, but the best bagel I've ever had in my life. And I said, okay, thank you. That's very kind. And he said, I just drove all the way back here just to have it. Well, that gives me the,
yes.
that gives you that energy. They're giving you this beauty, this spirit that they're sharing that just, it lights you up. It's like plugging in your, you know,
yes.
your gasoline.
So you don't need to do this. You're doing this for fun because you enjoy it.
Yes.
Which is?
It's a side hustle.
This is kind of like the
the ultimate goal. This is the ultimate
this
goal.
This is this theme that I keep on like finding my way back to in this all these conversations, which is like we meet with these people who are passionate and extraordinary at what they do. They spend some long amount of time working towards fame and fortune and whatever. And then eventually they're like, you know, the thing that brings me happiness is actually getting physically with my hands
mm-hmm. yes.
to do the thing that I wanted to do. And like in a giant organization, I'm sure there's pride in like building spectacular, you know, giant, like
being
you,
the ringleader.
You open a yes. huge hotel in Singapore yes. or wherever you've all
You're
over the
the
world
yes.
and hundreds of employees and frozen pizzas in every supermarket. And you know, like you did that, all that
yes.
frozen pizza. Like,
yes.
But at the end of the day,
so
you're
anybody
like,
who's
I want
ever
my-
had a Wolfgang Puck frozen pizza, Sherry is responsible for making
for
that
all
happen.
The iterations.
Yeah.
We were partners
That's amazing.
With yeah. Swanson. We were partners with Conagra. We mm-hmm. were partners with everybody. So
maybe you should have a pizzeria called Pizza by the Yard. And we'll sell it because it's so delicious.
They do that in Italy.
Yeah, yeah, but
yes.
they do pizza by the meter because it's Italian. But here it'll be pizza by the yard and it'll be so delicious that everybody buys at least 3 feet worth of your pizza.
Okay, no sad stories, but when I was opening Helms, when I was part of that project,
yeah.
there was a pizza station and I designed it so that this way everything was by the yard.
By the yard.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Because my idea for Helms was not that it was going to be... I wanted to build Helms for the city of Los Angeles. I felt like we didn't have our, you know, our bakery brand, and Helms was that, and that the spirits brought it to me, and I was supposed to redefine it based on what it was if it had evolved. And so inside, I put all these little vignettes of what I thought it would be, and then I would put a person in charge of each one of those vignettes, a donut station, a pizza station, a sandwich station, and all, etc. So yes, that was... Twinkle, twinkle, because then from there you could help that person then open up their own business, a pizzeria, whatever. It was all supposed to be a bubbling up.
Yes.
Kind of thing like
almost
that.
Like an incubator.
But we make plans.
A fermentation tank.
A fermentation
oh.
tank.
Oh, pun intended.
Yeah.
So, you know, you make plans and stuff happens. And that
but,
happen.
Okay, sorry. I'm like going to bounce all over the place here, but the amount of time and energy and the ingredients that go into... Is this a business that's, can someone open a bakery and make extraordinary pastries and, or do you have to charge like $50 for a bagel?
Okay, here's a really good, I'm so glad you asked this question. I swear I've been saying that I wanted to write an article.
We've been talking about the economics.
The New York Times or somebody big that everybody would hear. Here's the shame of it. If you buy a tea, right? You go to a coffee place and you buy a tea. It's a cup, it's some water, it's a tea bag, and it's a lid. Maybe one of those little cozies so you don't spill
Think
it
about
on
the
your,
children
your
that
crunch.
Have to pick those tea leaves. They
right.
get paid hundreds.
Okay, that said, $4, $3.75 on the cheap, $4.75 on the nut. Yet there are people complaining that a croissant is $6.
Yeah.
Right.
And a croissant, butter... And time.
Oh my God! It takes to do it again. Here we go. We talked about this. Is it's a good 3 days to make. Oh my gosh! You're gonna kvetch about, and so it's very. Thank goodness there are passionate people out there that are doing it, because these coffee houses, and I love everyone, are the ones that are really making a lot of money on the backs of some really wonderful artisans, as I say in pastry.
Yes.
Because. They want me to sell it. I will never. I said, anyone who comes to me and says, I want to buy your pastry. I want to sell it in my store. I said, I will take a baseball bat, as nice as I am, and I'll let you have it for like a week, and then I'll come in and I'll smash your case.
She's from Brooklyn, everyone. This
because it's
is
not fair. How could you expect me to charge you $2 or $2.25 for it, and then you're selling it for $4 and $5 there, and then people are still complaining, and it's pushing us. It's pushing... Any person, I got to the point where I was like, Norma Ray, I was like, okay, we're going to get every pastry person in the city just to boycott for a week or two, maybe a month. If I won the lottery, I'd pay everybody's salary in Los Angeles, and I would say no pastries for anybody because you guys don't appreciate it enough. Now, that said, I'm happy to make pastries for my little...
So I think,
your little shop and sell them.
I think this comes down to...
I would give them
it comes
away.
Down to like, you know, someone's like, hey, will you come over... And, you know, oh, I love what you do. Would you come to my house and cook dinner? I'm like, okay, well, my price is $10,000.
That's
I'm
right.
Like, for $10,000, I'll come over and cook you dinner. And they're like, well, that seems kind of expensive. Only like eight people. I'm like, well, you know, it's like $400 for dinner. And then it's like,
can I pay
you
someone
know,
to help you?
$1,000 for profit. And then it's like $8,000 for me to feel like a servant for
right.
the day.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you ask that Amanda, she's like, it's $50,000.
Yay! Or others.
No.
Well, that's just it. You know, if you wouldn't, just make this fair comparison. If you were an attorney or you're the top of your field, right, as yes. an attorney, you wouldn't be able to touch the person for less than $10,000, you know, an hour, $2,000, $500 an hour for, you know, just someone in the neighborhood, yes. right, to look at your paperwork. Yet you're getting some of the best chefs in the world, or you would think, or someone that has dedicated their life to it, and you're going to complain about, you know.
So you say to the person, like, listen, I'll do this for free because I love you.
You can't afford me, so you get it for free if you're a good person.
And so this yes. and then.
Or you can't afford me because I don't like what you're doing and what we represent.
When we go to a fancy sushi restaurant, you go to Moss and it's like, you know, so expensive. But the person that physically is the master is physically making your food, that in order for us to be able to afford to produce food at a cost that people are willing to pay for it, we wind up not being able to do it ourselves.
Nothing breaks my heart more than when we don't have an opportunity within our own industry for growth. Mm. That breaks my heart because, again, it's a dying art. It's yes. just, it's, and we're not going to go anywhere. You know, AI is going to take over, but you still need me and you and yes. everyone else to be in front of things to, like, put the love into it.
Okay, so.
For the farmer.
Okay. So now there's definitely, like, a shift towards artisan craft and appreciation of exactly what we're talking about that's happening right now. Like, and this is an easy one because for, like, since the age of advertising and industrialization, we, especially in America, have been, you know, taught yes. that food is a value-driven, not a quality-driven proposition. Like, you know, think about the number of pizzerias that are, like, competing for $8.99, $7.99, $6.99 for a pie. That's what people are saying is important. And now there are a few people that are, like, screaming and saying, hey, it should be a quality-driven
Yeah.
choice, not a value-driven choice. And obviously, like, we can only afford so much. You know, I can't afford $1,000 for a bagel every morning, but right. I, you know. But, like, this is, for me, this is something that I'm, like, fighting against. I'm like, hey, I service $5 slice of pizza. For $5 a slice. Like, I'm not driving a Ferrari.
No, yes, absolutely.
Well, before Sherry came in, Dan, you and I were talking about that, the conversation about the cost of food, the cost of labor, the cost yeah. of skill, right? And how you have to pay for that and how people don't understand what they're paying for. And I think that's really it. And it's, you know, it's sometimes people blame it on rent. You know, like, why is the tailor in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, $1 to put a button on and the one in Chelsea is $10?
Right.
And so that could be rent, right? But then in other times, it's you're getting a skill. You're getting expertise. You're getting right. a better butter. You're getting a better salt. You're getting
better butter.
30 years of experience.
So many things are going through my head. It's at, like, warp speed right now.
Right. And it's a lot to talk about, I think. And I think the consumer sometimes wants to hear it, wants to learn, and sometimes
okay.
they don't.
We grew up in a world. Okay. I'm yes. a baby boomer, if you will. Okay. Guess what? I turned 60 this year.
Whoa.
So
you look amazing and your energies abound.
You're very kind. And so we grew up at first where it was so precious. My father was a fireman. We'd get one thing of cookies every other week. If you eat it the first day, you'll never get it again. Everything was precious and precious and precious. And then somewhere along the line, things got bigger and bigger and yes. bigger. Bigger cheesecakes, bigger this, bigger that, right? And then everyone just takes it for granted. And then we want a t-shirt for a dollar. We want to go to one of these stores to get a t-shirt for a dollar. But then you're like, well, if the t-shirt costs a dollar and or the – there's so many stories going through my head right now. But if something costs so cheap and it's coming from a different country,
right.
then how do you expect to be paid your $20 an hour here in California right now? And then buy something so cheap. And so the whole dynamics of things are off.
Right.
It's better to don't eat so much. Eat the best, right?
Right.
Go to the farmer's market, buy the fruit. But this shirt that I'm wearing right now is 20 years old. Can you believe that? Because I bought the best. It was handmade by somebody in San Francisco. It was a local artisan. I'm not bragging about that stuff,
right.
but it's just important to me.
Of course.
That you buy the best from the best, and it will last forever. You know, it's kind of an old German thing, too. I'm Irish Catholic, but you know, you take care of things and it lasts longer and everything isn't disposable and people aren't disposable and food is, well, we poop it out really quick. It's kind of disposable. But if you're going to eat it.
Some faster than others. You know, I like to hold on to mine.
If you happen to invest in the stock market, I do not advocate Sherry's philosophy. Our economy is driven on you buying more useless stuff. So please continue to buy the crap that I produce for cheap.
If you do, then eat more of good things and things like that. I think it's just it's to me. I think it's a whole. We need to reset a little bit as a culture. Yeah.
On the Line podcast is brought to you by Danny Boy's Famous Original Pizza from downtown Los Angeles and Westwood, Los Angeles. Danny Boy's Pizza started with a singular goal of producing the best slice of pizza that we could possibly create. We make New York-style pizza with the finest ingredients, built by a team of fun-loving, like-minded, culinary-driven individuals, producing slices of pizza that are not going to empty your wallet, but they will fill your belly. Come down to Danny Boy's and say hi. I am on the line, cooking them up for you, as well as on the line with Amanda Freitag here in the studio for you. It's driven, I mean, without being like politically nonsense, it is driven by like the Wall Street idea of if you want people to doing nothing to make money, then there needs to, if the middle folks are making money, then, you know, the people that are actually physically doing it. But Danny Meyer talks about that idea that like, you know, the salespeople always make more money than the craftspeople.
Right,
and they
right,
can
right.
Even
the
in
waiters,
a restaurant when they're right next to
right,
each other.
The waiters
that disconnect,
standing there,
you know.
And the waiters, right. You know, yeah. Oh my gosh, at Spago years ago, we had a regular guest who came in who would spend, oh goodness, $20,000 on dinner. And he'd leave a $5,000 tip. And, you know, I'm not with the family anymore. I'm with the family. But I pulled the waiter to the side and I said, you think he comes here because you got a nice smile? He comes here because we are creating food for him for every course. The fact that you're going to walk away with $5,000 and tip out, you know, 10%, if that much, you better come in with gas cards for the kitchen. You better take care of these people because guess what? We can have somebody else on that table next time. You know, you have to, there's got to be, Brooklyn, New York, you do the right thing, right?
Yes.
Spike Lee, you just do the right thing. We do the right thing by everybody.
Yeah. That's speaking all. Of Brooklyn, give me the 30-second Sherry Yard history from Brooklyn to this moment, because I think for people who don't know you, and I don't know who that is, they need to know what a powerhouse you are and how you got to this moment.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so grew up in Brooklyn, New York, at a time where you had the whole black-white situation, not just the cookie, but, you know, busing
which,
in.
By the way, has been solved today, so
yes,
thankfully.
Yeah,
figured that one
it was, that was very interesting. We had kids bust into my neighborhood to go to school. One of them was Chris Rock, ironically enough.
Wow.
Yeah, so I grew up in an all-white neighborhood, but everyone was Polish or Greek or Italian or Irish or whatnot.
What part of Brooklyn was it?
Sheepshead Bay, Garrison nice. Beach. So it's this little peninsula off that side of the Knapp Street exit of the Belt Parkway. And we, four daughters, New York City firemen. My father worked two jobs all the time, so we could afford the house. Went to all-girl Catholic schools.
Wow.
Girl Catholic schools in high school in the morning. I had boys in my class
until
8th grade. And then after that, my family was in the hospitality business. And I didn't even realize it. My uncle started as a bellhop at the Waldorf Astoria. My grandmother was a turned-down maid. And he went on to be the general manager of the Waldorf Astoria.
Wow.
Grandma left and had kids. And my aunt had a restaurant in Greenwich Village with two gay men. Oh, my goodness, in the 60s. And so no one talked about that. And I had
a great uncle.
And so we had this very kind of bubbling thing going on in the family. And I just found myself really addicted towards service and helping and being around people. And I actually got a scholarship to go to nursing school and forgot about it. And I went instead to culinary school. And I worked at the Rainbow Room. I opened the Rainbow Room in New York City. I worked with Drew Nierpoint at Marche. We opened up Tribeca
Grill.
Restaurant.
Oh,
Deborah Ponczak.
Oh, no, I was just thinking of Elizabeth Faulkner's coming. She worked for
She worked with Drew at Rubicon. Yeah. So she and I are like West Coast, East Coast sisters. Yes. We kind of like switched places at one point.
And yes.
We met in San Francisco when she was Little Lizzie Faulkner.
Did she work at the Rainbow Room too? No.
She was in San Francisco. So I was at Rainbow, Marche, Tribeca, got on a plane, decided it was important to fly west because that's where all the women chefs were.
Yes. I was going to ask you what brought you west.
So I actually met Michael Mina, of all people in the world. He was, can I say this? We called him Haji. It was just an old name, no slurs. But we met Haji at Tribeca Grill. And he said to me, we're opening up a place in San Francisco with George Marone. These are all old names.
But it's great to hear them again.
Great old names. And he said, you have to come out and help me open up the place. And so I said, okay, I'm going to go out there instead of other job offers in New York City. I was on a plane the night before. Michael calls me, says, the restaurant's not ready to be open. You better stay in New York. I said, heck with you. I already bought a ticket. My family threw me a party. I have a one-way ticket. I'm on my way to San Francisco. And so that's when I started to call around as San Francisco, and I wound up working with Jan Birnbaum and, well, it was Brad Ogden and Jan Birnbaum at Campton Place Hotel. And so I took over the ovens there. I worked at the Campton Place Hotel. Do you really?
I worked for Laurent Monrique for the Campton Place Hotel.
So after?
Yeah, like forever. I mean, it was like
after
forever.
And before after, Daniel.
That's my great story is like what Nate Appelman was coming in later today and I were working at the Campton Place Hotel. And this Swiss guy came in to try out.
Yes.
And he put these pepper diamonds on the plate and these parsley around. And we were like, yo, we are not going to work for this loser. We are out of here. So both of us quit, and that Swiss guy was Daniel Hum.
Yay! Yeah.
So that was a poor culinary decision that I made. Was not to work for that loser.
Acclaimed chef Daniel Hum.
The number one restaurant.
One other Daniel I have a bone to pick with, by the way, is Daniel Boulud.
Why? We love
because
him.
I'm going to tell you exactly why.
Oh, no.
Daniel Boulud and I share a birthday. We have the same birthday. And on three occasions on my birthday, I have been with him. And you know what it feels like to have everybody sing happy birthday to a guy named Daniel when it's your birthday in the same room and nobody knows that it's your birthday? That really hurt my feelings.
Oh, he's the best. You know, I work with Daniel too at the Cirque.
Yeah,
You worked at the Cirque? Way like in between as an intern. Yeah.
Wow.
From New York City Technical College. So he's a papa. One time, a really quick story. One time I'm late to get on a plane and we're taking one of those little commuter planes from Los Angeles to Carmel to go to that Food and Wine Festival. And I see the plane right there and I want to get on. And the woman says, I'm sorry, the doors have closed. And I said, but look at all that luggage. It's all still being loaded. She says, no.
Daniel got me in the luggage compartment.
There's luggage. Like, they're still loading. I can see tons and tons of luggage. And I see Daniel, the little stairs are down. So I see all of a sudden, it's like an angel comes to the top of the stairs and raises his arms and says, Shelly, you have to get on the plane. Open the door. I am Danielle. Open the door. And son of a gun, they open the door and they let me get onto the plane.
I can see it. There was light around him.
I go scurrying up the hills. Oh my God, thank God, because we had a dinner that night.
Wow.
And I was going to be late, but oh my gosh, sorry. So we
no, went so to the fantastic story. You were moving from Brooklyn because there were women chefs in California.
Women chefs in California. Come on. Alice Waters, Barbara Trop, Joyce Goldstein. Everybody's out there. Everybody's cooking and doing it and moving and grooving. And so, ironically enough, I wound up not with a woman. I wound up with Brad Ogden and then Jan Birnbaum at Campton Place. And I just adored it there because it was breakfast, lunch, dinner. We had a little dining room, 80 seats in the dining room, 80 rooms upstairs. And I was able to make dog biscuits for dogs that came to visit, and I got to know so many different things.
Did you fall in love with California? As a New Yorker?
Don't you know this? Like when you open up a place, and it wouldn't matter
where you are.
Right? You're in a kitchen.
Yes.
And so you go to bed, and you wake up, and you go there. And often people say, you opened up in Singapore. How was it? You know, the first time. You say,
right.
The plane's great. The hotel room is awesome.
I advise against graffitiing in Singapore.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You don't want to do that. Don't do any. Be your best behavior.
No spitting, no graffiti, no gum chewing.
But that encapsulizes the chef talk, right, that we talk about all the time. And people think, oh, they get to travel. They get to see the world. They they get to eat the best meals. No, you're in your hotel room.
You're happy.
Eating french fries at 2 a.m. Yeah. And you're, you know,
the closest I got to a tan was a burn from the infrared oven or whatever.
Yes.
Well, that's just it. I can't say, I won't say where, but I went to do an event and Tom Colicchio was there. He and I were there. And we were both kind of get up to the front desk and we're, what are you going to, you know, you want to go out and grab something? Oh, I'm just going to go back tomorrow. Are you hungry? I'm hungry too. Go back to a room. We'll order a room service. So the next morning we see each other and say, how was your room service? And he said, well, it was challenging just to make the order. They wouldn't make me an egg. I'm like, just make an egg and I'll put it with my salad. I'll do this. And I'm sorry, you know, that's for breakfast and all of that. So I said, so both of us creatively ordered off the menu and recooked everything in our rooms.
That's fantastic.
That's what we do, right?
Yes, it's like, okay, make it your own.
If there's a hot dog nearby, I'll eat a hot dog. But there was nothing hot. And we were off in the boonies. So that's what you do.
Yeah. No, that to me is telling for people who think chefs live a glamorous life.
They don't. We do sometimes and we don't. I feel like I'm Forrest Gump often. There's so many times where, again, I could tell you stories for days where I'm standing in a room and I'm prepping something and someone is in the next room and they're talking. Like, oh, I shouldn't be hearing this. Oh, my. Cool. One of the coolest ones was when I was in a room and Teddy Kennedy was talking to Caroline after she had gone on the Democratic convention doing a speech. And he was telling her how proud her dad would have been of him.
Oh.
I don't think that's a bad thing to tell anybody. But there's been a lot of times where I'm in the room where it happened. And you just have to, you know, kind of keep your...
Oh, I'm sure you've seen a lot and heard a lot.
Good stuff.
So what happened after Campton Place?
Oh, Campton Place. Jan moved up to, I was going to move back to New York City. And I decided, since I never get out to see anything, I was going to take a car and drive from San Diego all the way up the coast because I wanted to see proper California coast. And I wound up ending up at Catahoula, which was Jan's new restaurant. And he said, please don't leave me. We didn't find anybody. You got to stay. So I said, oh, I'll stay for a year. So I was with Jan up in Calistoga.
What year is this?
94. Earthquakes were happening around me. So there was an earthquake in San Francisco. And
I remember
left there.
That.
And there was an earthquake in Los Angeles. And then I left there and then went up to Calistoga. So I go up to, sorry, it's Calistoga, then back down. So I'm up there with Jan. And one day I come home and we had one of those answer machines. Beep, beep, beep. And I hit the answer machine and it says, hi, this is Wolfgang. So you call me back. So I called my friend Bob back in Hyde Park, and I said, oh, my God, that's the best Wolfgang Puck I've ever heard. He says, I'm sleeping, you jerk. But it wasn't me. Are you drunk and you're dialing me again?
I said, no, it's not a drunk dial.
So I then played it back, and they had the number, and I called back. At this point, it's like midnight, and they said, hi, Spago. And I hung up the phone. I said, oh, that was Wolfgang Puck.
But wait a second. So is Wolfgang Puck
that
is at the time.
Actually gives me goosebumps because that's the real deal.
Yeah.
At the time, Wolfgang Puck was, I'm trying to understand because like now.
Eureka, Malibu, he had Granita.
So he was already this like powerhouse.
Spago was
from what
huge.
We know. Yes. And he did some good, he was doing Good Morning America. He was just on the precipice of starting to open cafes. His
Didn't
frozen
Regis
food
Philbin
line.
Love him, weren't they?
Yes,
like a
they were all
best.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's a whole nother chapter of the Spago days and all the wonderful people that would come in that we had the honor of knowing what their favorite things were. And so I walked in. Wolfgang called, and I called back the next day, and he said, "I heard you're looking for a job." I said, well, I'm not sure about Los Angeles. And he said, no, you come down, you visit, okay? When are you off next? And I said, well, tomorrow is Tuesday, so we're only day that we're closed. Okay, I'll see you tomorrow. Hold on. And he hangs up puts me on hold, and his assistant picks up. She said, come through Oakland. There's a plane every hour on the half hour. If you get on one at 7:30, we'll see you soon. So by 9:30, I was at Spago, 9:30 in the morning. I was at Spago sitting across the table from Wolfgang, and I walked in. Oh, my gosh, the old Spago? Okay. It was because it was only open at night. It was gorgeous at night. Lower the lights. It's the old, you mess something up, throw some powdered sugar on it, right?
Right.
Lower the lights, put the candles up, everything looks gorgeous. But I walked in during the day. And I'd come from places like, you know, really nice, Surf, from Rainbow Room, some really nice places. Calistoga was more rustic, but I was like ready to go to Spago.
Yes.
And there they were, the lawn chairs with the beat up old cushions on them and the floor that all these people had wonderfully walked over. And I just looked at him. And he said, don't worry, we're going to fix it up. It's going to be nice. He read my mind right away. It's going to be great. We're going to do really nice things here. And then I sat down and we kept talking and talking and talking. And I look up and it's 1:30 in the afternoon. I'm starving. And I said, don't you eat? He says, okay, we go see my friend. So we go over to Nobu's, Nobu Matsuzu. We hang out with him for lunch. We come back. It's like 4:30 in the afternoon. I said, you know, I got to go home.
Yeah.
And he said, well, when are you going to start working? I said, I don't know. You do pizza. I don't know if I want to work here. He's like, you got to work here. And
there's just no question.
Yeah. It was
You're
just
going
funny.
To.
It was
yeah.
funny because he said, when can you start? And I said, And there was another thing in between, which is a really neat story, is that I never took pictures of things. Who has time? You know,
No. You're
always afterwards like, what did I make? What did I do? At Campton Place, we didn't have a plater for pastry. So all the pantry guys would do it and gals. And so I would draw them on these postcards that were the postcards from Campton Place on the one side and do the diagrams and all of that. So I thought, well, I've got nothing to show him from my stuff. I don't have a resume. He just called me yesterday. Let me just bring these pictures. So at the table, right before we go for lunch, I throw these pictures down with all the names and desserts on it, and he freaks out completely. He gets up and he runs over to the bar at Spago. And he comes back and he holds this, you know, white thing in front of him, and he says, 10 years ago, people told me that they designed the menu for me, that it would be $5,000 or $10,000. He said, I told them I'd do it myself. And he turned it around and it matched my pictures. It was a pear tart. I had a pear tart. He's like, you got to work here. So that's when you said, you got to work here.
Wow.
It was like there were so many like Minchie meant to be kind of things that it was like, okay, I'll come and work here.
But I love that you drew all your own plates. You know, now in the age of the phone, we take photos of everything.
Right.
You had to illustrate.
You had to draw everything with a line because, you know, you didn't want to say to the guy, I would even say 4 minutes. I made Pop-Tarts because we couldn't have anything to heat things up. So I made gingerbread Pop-Tarts with peach filling because I needed something to get heated up. But he put toast in the morning. He knew how to use the toaster. So what
yeah,
are they?
Creative.
You just do whatever you can with all of that
stuff.
But
I've drawn
fun.
Diagrams of plates that are in...
You have? Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't see... You go. My drawing is terrible. Yours is beautiful.
I don't know. Listen, it was just like, you know, and then pencils. Oh, you like pencils? And there I am, like, regressing back to our being 5 years old. You like pencils? You like to draw? I got crayons, too. You want to
be You guys were kismet. This is meant
it
to
was,
be,
and
clearly.
I told him, he said, you're going to come and you work with us for a long time. And I said, 2 years max.
And 20 years later.
Well, that's what I joke around. Hey, 2 years, 3 years max. And I joke around and say dog years. So it was 20 dog years. And yeah. I said, if I stayed 21, I'm drinking on the job every day. So I get to vote at 18 and then I get to drink on the job at 21. So just short of 20.
So if anybody obviously knows Wolfgang Puck's reach and fame and everything, yeah. like they know what a big part of that you were. And,
oh, that's
and
kind of you.
That you did products and that you cooked at the Oscars and the Emmys and every award yeah. show.
I
and
do
everything
the Emmys
Hollywood.
Now.
I know I saw that on
What
your,
does that
I
do
mean
that
when
now.
You say you do the Emmys? What is that?
Do
what does that
Emmys,
mean?
Dance on the table. So when in Los Angeles, Joachim Spichal was doing the Emmys, meaning catering the Emmys for years.
This
and
is
that would
Patina
mean
guy.
Patina.
Patina.
Right. Patina guy.
Didn't he buy that back or he sold it again?
Yeah, genius.
He like bought
oh, please,
it,
that's
sold
a whole
other
book
it.
I want to do. I want to
I
do
love
like The Life of Madeleine Kamen to Julia Child. I want to do the Michelle Richard to Wolfgang Puck to Joachim Spichal. There just
the
seems to be these
tree.
Clusters of groupings of chefs and people that their lives have been synonymous and yet
yes.
so individual. And, you know, Wolfgang did business different than Joachim did. And
but they both were fabulously
financially successful.
And
oh my gosh great.
But they were at that time
they are
the two,
they
the
both
two
are.
That were just doing it and you know
and Michelle we gotta like Michelle Richard
of course Michelle
you know,
Richard
he moved
yes.
off to DC because
yes.
he felt that he wasn't getting the accolades that the other two were
yes.
and part of it was because he was deemed a pastry chef first
right
but as we all know a pastry chef knows how to make lamb chops
of course
you know I look at some of these line
your
cooks
knives might
like,
be
oh,
dull but
you're not they are not well some people's on mine are not as a matter of fact I can introduce you to a great knife sharpener right here in the Mosa but that's just it. There is like this level of disrespect for him that he wound up leaving. But Wolfgang, yes, and Wolfgang on that side.
You were saying the Emmys. You were talking about how you
well,
what it
Wolfgang
means to do the Emmys.
Was doing yeah. the
he
catering.
Was doing
so you had Wolfgang Puck catering the Oscars, and you had Joachim catering the Emmys. And both are very prestigious awards to be a part of.
And you did both for many years.
Well, I did the Oscar. I worked with Wolfgang on the Oscars and created all the Oscar. It was so much fun every year. I was like, let's, like Malibu Barbie. Like, let me dress him up. Let me put him on a box. Let me put him by the sand. Let me put him everywhere.
Yes.
So with respect, because that is huge. They very well respect the image of Oscar, and we were only allowed to use it for the promotion thereof or that evening. And so now, years later, started about 4 years ago, I was approached by the production team and the governor's governing group of the Emmys, the governators, and they asked me to participate in the Emmys, which was very fantastic. Very fun. And the Emmys are fun because guess what? It's not one party; it's many parties.
Yes.
So you've got daytime Emmys, you've got primetime Emmys, you've got documentary Emmys, you've got all these parties. Yeah. So it's a lot of fun.
My big brother's got a couple.
It is coming up. Oh, we just did the one in January because of the writer's strike.
Oh, right.
They
made sure that
everyone was recognized for 2023, and now we're going to go into 2024.
Mm, what is your favorite thing to do? I mean, out of all of these things.
Hang out with you guys.
The coffee shop in the morning, the Emmys, the Oscars, hang around with Wolfgang and celebrities.
No, I don't hang out with
those
guys.
Charities that you donate to. I mean, I looked at your schedule. It looks insane. You know,
that's because I get, as you say, I get to be by myself in my space, and it's, sometimes it gets lonely too.
Yeah.
So if someone knocks on the door, I'm like, here, have something to eat. Come talk to me. And so I really appreciate all the charity. I mean, I think without a doubt, the restaurant industry is, and I'm so thrilled that we now have the Restaurant Coalition that came about because of COVID that's standing up for us.
That's great.
Right? Is it called the...
You're in California, right?
Well, you have it. It's called the...
National Restaurant Association.
But it's... No, it's the other one. Where's my brain? I'm so sorry. Will Gadara, all of these guys got together. I was on the phone calls in the beginning, and this is my pastry slash cancer brain. I can't remember sometimes some things and names. But they got together to be able to get us funding, you know, to get us the relief that we needed.
They did a phenomenal job with that.
Incredible. And I was on the calls, and they were like, that guy from Arkansas is a Republican, but guess what? He eats at my restaurant every week, and I'm going to approach him. He's gonna promote the bill and help the bill, but guess what? He'll vote against it, but it doesn't matter because we'll be able to get the money in the long.
Right. I mean, I'm just looking at your schedule here, right? You're doing a fundraiser for Lupus in May.
Yeah.
5/19. May 19th. Then a food bank, June 1st.
Tonight is the No Kid Go Hungry.
No Kid Hungry is tonight. That's right. We're talking
Mary
Billy
Sue,
Harris tomorrow.
Billy Harris. He's being honored tonight. And Mary Sue Milligan. And oh my gosh.
Then you're doing...
American Cancer Society.
Something for Justice on June
15th. Pies for Justice.
Pies for Justice. Woo-hoo! Then you're doing...
But you do have a team of people that are...
Me, myself, and I.
Gather
for it. I mean, is that for real?
And the Emmys. I mean, okay, and you must have... You must have somebody who helps you organize all this. You must have...
I don't have a...
Students of Sherry. Who are your people that you bring along?
I'm blessed that sometimes folks want to come and help.
Yes.
So we have one gal, CCAP. CCAP is another one.
Yes,
Careers
great
for Culinary
organization.
Arts. Helps kids get underserved kids, get scholarships to go to culinary school. And Hannah worked at Spago. And I watch everyone and I say, oh, can you help? You know, we're doing a CCAP thing. You got the $120,000 scholarship. You might want to come and help. And nor do I need to twist her arm. She was, yes, I want to help out. So we're honoring Nancy Silverton that night, May 17th. It's a Friday at the Jonathan Club. And she and I are going to do Nancy's new book, The Kentucky Bourbon Cake.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll do that together. So those kind of things. Or, you know, the Emmys, then I might bring in one or two people.
Yes.
Because that's 12,000 people. But I'm really good at, I love numbers. I love big numbers. I did Delta Airlines. I did 20,000 cookies a day for them. And I figured out how to coordinate that.
Are you still working with Delta?
No, I'm not. You know, it was a John and Vinny contract.
We spoke with them yesterday.
We love them. I call them I'm the fixer. So whatever name you gave me before, I'm the fixer. And somebody's like, oh, shoot. What do we do? So they called me on a Thursday. They needed cookies starting the next Wednesday. And I said, we gotcha. One of my favorite sayings, difficult immediately, the impossible, give me a minute.
Wow.
So we're going to do this.
That's like my favorite song lyric.
Is it a song?
The impossible, I'll do right now. The difficult will take a little while.
Really?
Crazy calls
Sherry wrote that
crazy
song, by the way.
I thought I did.
You know what I'm talking about? You know that song? Yes, you do.
But wait,
crazy I want to know this song because it's going to be my theme song.
Great. I want you to say that again for anybody who's listening, for anybody who's an aspiring chef, for anybody who's a chef right now, for anybody who's a pastry chef, which is a very difficult place to be right now because that is the first thing that gets cut out of a restaurant. Say that again. The difficult.
Immediately.
Immediately.
The impossible. Give me a minute.
The impossible. Give me a minute.
Yeah. Because I really believe, this is my biggest belief, is that, come on, when I first started out in the world of gymnastics, when I thought I could do gymnastics back in the day, and Nadia Comaneci came in and she did a somersault, and I was like, oh my God, look at that. Now look at Simone Biles. Holy crap, what she's doing with her body is like defying everything. So I really am a big believer of when someone says no, you just go, oh, okay, that's fine. Well, no, tell me more so I can make it happen. We can do it. Anybody can do it. I mean, how many people have lost limbs and whatever? We're so blessed that, yes. And in this time of technology, and I've been fighting with AI. I have the best time. I get on my AI and I yell at it and I tell it to call me chef and it says, yes, chef. But then I'm not allowed to call it sous chef. I'm sorry, you don't have to give me my name. I'd love to argue with you. I told you to give me the best world's best chocolate chip cookie recipe. And it says, well, there isn't one, but we can do this. All right, give me what you got. And then they give me that thing. And I'm like, I told you I'm a professional pastry chef. Why are you giving it to me in cups? Oh, I'm sorry. And then it gives it back to me from cups to the grams. And then I said, well, you're even wrong there. What's the matter with you?
I love that you're arguing with AI. Well,
that's what this is now. Great. With ChatGPT. I actually put in. Yes. I put in the other day for pizza ideas, and they're great. They're great. They came up with like this asparagus and feta pizza. I was like, I'm putting that on the menu for sure.
But this challenge, yeah. I mean, like, I think that's like something you have to pass on. You have to pass that on. That idea of difficult immediately. Anybody would run from that.
But I think anybody. I think in our industry, we all do it a lot more than we've realized.
Yes, absolutely.
But it's ingrained. The truck falls over and everything's upside down. Yes. Where everyone else would like throw their arms up and walk away. Restaurant people were like the firefighters.
Yes. You don't have a choice in the restaurant business.
You don't.
It's like a deadline every night. The curtain's going up. And and you got to perform. And you got to put on a smile. Most horrible feeling is when you know for yourself that it's under the quality of your expectation, and then you just stand there and everybody goes, oh my God, it was delicious, and you're thinking
well, you start to think and you start to listen to who's God. Who
right.
you
know yes. Yes. the voices in
I
your
call
head
it the Cindy Crawford theory. You know Cindy Crawford?
Yeah, yeah. I met her.
So right, okay, yeah. So who's
she's
not
married
gonna be
to that musician guy with the
who's not gonna be nice to Cindy Crawford, right? Yeah. I think it was Howard Stern that said this years ago, and that's why I call it the Cindy Crawford theory. Because she was talking about how nice some executive was, and he says, he's such a jerk. And she said, he's so nice. She said, you have no point of reference. You're right. Cindy Crawford. So when people come in and say to me, that's the best ever, I'm like, okay. And I just smile because I know what their point of reference is. But that's why I wanted to hear what you had to say about the bagel, because then your point of reference would be different than anyone here.
The bagel, going back to the bagels, you said something to me that I remembered forever. You said, I was asking about the color of the pastries, how to tell if a pastry is great. And she said, the color of the pastry.
Color equals flavor.
She said, the only thing, I like to say, the only thing that's blonde in my bakery, honey, is me.
That's right.
And that really, it's everything, the idea that, and I think I understand I don't really understand why it happens, but the color is an important piece of the puzzle. It's caramelization, but the science of what makes that color happen.
Crackety crack. It has a lot to do with the mix as well.
But
when
the basic science.
When you crack open that protein, it's happier.
Yes, protein.
It's happier. Sugars. Yeah. It's happier. And as it sits and it ages, that's going to
happen. We had a bunch of conversation when we were writing the last cookbook. I asked her for a bunch of help, and she gave me a lot of help and advice. And I just like realized that unless you invest your life into learning about this, I wasn't going to be able to understand. Really, like, I'm starting to understand, but I don't really understand.
And I still learn every day. We all do. That's the beauty of it.
That is the beauty of it.
It is the beauty of it. And that's the mystery, and that's what makes it so exciting, you know?
But the fact that you're still excited about it is the thing that's infectious about you.
Like, and then share it with someone else so that this way that gets out of your brain. You know, that's why I wrote the first book. It was called Secrets of Baking, because there shouldn't be secrets, right? You should understand baking better.
How many cookbooks have you written?
Just two, like children.
I just had two.
There are four more on my computer, and I just didn't feel that it's... I don't know, the time or...
They have to ring true.
Or is it necessary? I love sitting and watching all the... Okay, Malcolm Gladwell. Does everybody know Malcolm Gladwell?
I was just talking about it yesterday.
10,000 hours,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I've got this theory that he should rewrite the book and it should be based on like 2,000 hours now. Right?
And maybe between the internet and efficiency,
that book is not relevant anymore.
Right? I mean, it's because he talks about, you know, the guys in Stanford getting on the computer in the middle of the night and they got their 10,000 hours, blah, blah, blah. At Spago, when I left and I left Spago 13 years ago now, I would stay up at night and put on every one of their computers all at once. And I would just work off all the computers at once because they were slow.
Yeah.
And then it made it easier for me to get everything done in a shorter amount of time. Well, now everything's I have three screens now at my house, and everything goes faster, faster, faster.
On the Line podcast is brought to you by Freitag Cocktails. I'm so excited about these. Freitag, that's me. Friday in German, hello. Friday's a great day for a cocktail. We make them in a family-owned distillery in San Diego. Chef-crafted cocktails, our own bitters, our own vermouth. We make Manhattan, Negroni, Margarita. What else could you ask for? Go to freitagcocktails.com, order them today, and they'll be delivered to your door. Cheers!
So 10,000 hours? No, I mean, look, someone, and this is not, what do they call that, sour grapes. Someone reads Bread's book by Ori, right, from Bread's.
Yeah, uh-huh. Best babka in the business.
Best babka, right? So then, oh, somebody reads it. He worked a lifetime to make it as good as he can. He has integrity. He wants to make the recipe as perfect as he can for the book. And next thing you know, you've got, you know, popping up people that are now they're the babka experts, you know, that have done that. There was a guy here in Los Angeles, LA Times, is writing a whole story about him and how he's so great. It's like, oh my God, come on. He didn't put in 500 hours.
Yeah.
Trust you me. There's a big place in town.
You're talking about the idea of like, you know, when you go, I went to physics, my physics professor, I was having a hard time understanding something. And he was like, well, you know, humanity took 10,000 years to get to this point. So if it takes you a couple of hours, like give yourself a little break. The idea is that we can build, that's what's so amazing about humans, Americans. Very amazing about Americans. God bless us.
Yeah.
is that humans can build on our past learning and exponentially kind of accelerate our knowledge. And that's,
AI is going to go around us. Yeah, we're just going to be like...
It's gonna be great.
I like that you're arguing with AI. I like that you're arguing.
She's teaching.
I wrote ChatGPT and I said, can I be on some sort of council to make sure they don't screw this up?
Yeah.
So you're going to embrace it.
Of course.
Yes.
Oh, anything new. I'm excited by it. I'm so blessed to be in a time when we can, right?
I run into this with the internet. My wife... I've got a phenomenal cookbook collection that I'm really proud of, and she finds her recipes on the internet. And, you know, some of the recipes are great. She's a really good cook. She's got great taste, but she doesn't have the depth of knowledge to like look at a recipe and then know how it's going to come out and read it and see, is this going to be good or bad? Until it's too late.
She has no crystal ball.
Right. So she like, you know, now she'll show me the recipe and I'm like, no, that doesn't look right. She's like, how do you know? I'm like, well, you know.
And it's your job to know.
This is, well, so I learned how to do this from Sherry because as a savory cook, we cook as we cook along. We can adjust the flavor. As a baker, it's like alchemy. You know, you put all this shit in the bowl, you mix it up, you throw it in the oven and it's too late.
And
it
that's
came
it.
Out. So I asked you, I was like, how do you bake creatively? How does a person bake creatively? I can follow a recipe. I can do the same thing over and again. If I've done it a bunch of times, maybe I can adjust something and pray.
Right.
And
no, I've tried that. It doesn't
so
work.
I was like, I just assumed that when you get to your level, you're like, oh, I just, you know, put a little extra flour. I taste it. I'm like, it's too sweet. But you showed me something that was so cool.
Ooh, I can't wait to hear.
Because I'm an impatient baker. Can you describe the situation of your how you like develop? It's so crazy.
Baker's percentage?
You're so out of your mind crazy.
We're talking baker's percentage.
Yeah, your baker's percentage sheets with every.
Yeah, Excel's.
Baker's percentage.
In baking, you have percentages, right?
Right.
So a quick lesson, everybody out there. There's solids and there's liquids. Egg, solid or liquid? Solid.
Liquid.
Solid, because it heats. Sugar,
oh my
God. Flour, solid.
I already failed.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I'm going to rattle. Butter, it looks like a solid, but it's actually a liquid. Sugar looks like a solid, but it's actually a liquid. Eggs look like a liquid, but it's actually a solid. So if we go just to something as simple as a pound cake. A pound cake is what? A pound of butter, a pound of sugar, a pound of eggs, and a pound of flour. Make sense?
Yes.
Now, if you take your
this
butter,
works in grams as well, by the way. Mm-hmm. You just got to make a tiny cake.
450.
Fahrenheit 454.
No, not Fahrenheit. Grams. 455 grams. Anyway, you know, a pound of butter. So, but just to think about that, the butter and the sugar on the top and the eggs and the flour on the bottom. So if I said to you, make a pound cake, you can make a pound cake right now, can't you?
Of course I can.
Now you can. Now you say, oh, my pound cake's so much better. And you say, well, your pound cake's so much better. Well, I put sour cream in mine. Well, good, that's so nice. And, you know, and then all of a sudden you get to a point where it's the solids are more dense and then the liquids and it's heavy. So then what do? Add something we called a concentrated stabilizer. Okay, so a solid is stable, it makes things solid, a liquid liquefies things. So we add a concentrated stabilizer like a baking powder or baking soda. A baking powder does not work off acid or will not, right. You need acid to be able to do that, right? So then you go, okay, I've got lemon in my recipe, so I'm going to use soda and I'm going to do that. But then Americans start to add baking powder because they like training wheels, they got to hold on to everything. So you can't just take any recipe off the internet that way necessarily because somebody might be screwing with it and next thing you know, you've got...
Right. So basically what she showed me.
Are you going to translate
so,
right now?
So basically what she held up, she has these sheets of computations where if I say, well, I want to make a blondie, she goes, okay, well, I'm going to take all the blondie recipes out of cookbooks and I'm going to translate the recipes
that's
into
the
baker's percentages so I can tell like how much chocolate chips go in a blondie. And if you look at all of these recipes, you can go, well, you know, there's from 3% up to 7% of chocolate chips in a blondie, depending on the recipe. And now when I'm starting to look at these recipes from all these books and all these chefs, I can start to see who has been inspired by whose recipes, who's literally taken the same recipes, who's not, because you can take all that.
I put mine in the middle.
Yeah.
And then I start to put everybody else's on the side.
Right.
When I wrote The Secrets of Baking, I actually, just for Pat Eschew, I had 3 pages.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can start to see, okay, well, a blondie, the butter percentage is between these parameters, and how does it affect the, you know, the butter's a liquid, so if I'm going to add more butter, what's that going to do to the texture?
Right.
I want my blondie to be chewier. Okay, well, you know, white sugar is crispy and brown sugar is chewier.
So,
like, I'm going to swap brown sugar for white sugar. And it turned this, what it did to me is it made me realize, like, oh, again, there's a lifetime of learning and experience here, and it's not something that I'm going to translate into, like, the secret of baking should be that it's complicated and should be deeply respected.
That's very kind.
Wait, I have a question. Are mm-hmm. chocolate chips a liquid or a solid?
They're a non-nothing. They're a non-entity. I mean, if you melt it, they come in and they harden. Yes. Like, you think, close your eyes and, you know, what form is it going to be used? So in ganache, for example, right?
Yes.
So you've got, it turns into a liquid because you heat it up. But will it affect the recipe if you're doing a cake? Yes, that's why you don't have all chocolate. You've got cocoa in the chocolate recipe because it just, we do that. That said, that's not necessarily true because there's like a whiskey tort, right, where you do... the liquid is substitute with whiskey. Woohoo! I love that one.
But doesn't
that change
things?
And it's bound by a little bit of egg.
So if I had,
yes, it
if
is
I had unlimited,
yes.
If I was it's like liquid. Elon Musk money, if I had unlimited money,
yeah.
I would plug your brain into
all
it.
All of us together, because I have another idea that's out of control. I need to team up with someone.
I want to team up with a techie person to take all these. Because
when
I read it, yeah, when I read
a
recipe, I'm like, I can tell that recipe isn't good because salt percent should be between point.
Exactly.
After talking to you, I'm like between 0.95 and 1.2%. Anything is too
unless
salty.
You're using it over
so
longer periods.
I can look at the recipe. So I want to take all these internet recipes and I want to download them and fix them with AI. I want AI that's like, now, I predict that this recipe will be under-seasoned, and I'm going to fix it for you.
I got like a big, giant idea when it comes to all of those things.
Can we talk about that?
You guys
I love to talk about
my
it.
Because I also want
to
take all the cookbooks.
Imagine being able to go, okay, my grandmother made the best, blah, blah,
yes.
blah. And
yes.
then you go, you'll be able to put it into the computer. And then it's a really big idea.
I want to talk about
you
this
never know
all,
who's
as
listening,
well because...
Sherry.
Because
we need money and techie person.
The other thing that exists out there is that the internet recipes are all these recipes from, you know, dilettantes and lovely people. And the cookbooks are not digitized, and there's this...
No, I won't let mine be digitized. They've called me, I can't tell you how many times, and I say, no, thank you.
I'm scanning, Sherry's book, and I'm putting... the secrets will not be secret. I used to cook from that book the other day. I love that book.
Are we going to lose cookbooks in this process?
No, we're not going to lose cookbooks. We're going to take it so that when I go to make a roast chicken, instead of... You know, Debbie from Idaho's roast chicken. I'm going to get Jonathan Waxman's roast chicken on Cafe. That's what I want. You know, Zuni Kid or Zuni Cafe. Mm-hmm. God rest your soul.
But you're going to pull that cookbook off of your shelf.
I am going to take it. I'm going to scan it, and then I'm going to have AI fix Jonathan's chicken.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with Jonathan's chicken.
What's going on with Jonathan's chicken?
Can we, I'm sorry. I digress.
When was the last time
I'm going to come back to the most basic of questions. Why pastry? What was it? Was there one thing that brought you there? Because there's such a disconnect between savory chef's brains and pastry chef's brains. I mean, you're a scientist. You are analytical. You're patient.
There's everything in there. There's like, right? There's creativity in pastry.
And creativity.
And then, okay, so like last week, someone called me and they wanted cake, right? So I don't normally do those kind of things, especially not Frozen or Ninja Turtles or any of that. So they called me and it was, God rest her soul, a wonderful Peg Yorkin activist, 90 and change, regular Sparkle guest. And they said, can you just send us some stuff? The family wants a cake. So I said, oh, okay. So I sent them a bunch of pictures.
This is for her funeral.
For her memorial, celebration of life, yes. And so so I sent them pictures. And they said, okay. I said, what do you mean, okay? We'll have all of them. I said, what do you mean you'll have all of them?
You have to pick one.
I thought you were picking one. They said, no, Peg would have loved all of them. So I wound up making, what, 8 cakes for Peg Yorkin. And I didn't realize how much, like, I'm the doer, I'll get it done. And I realized, oh my gosh, 12-layer chocolate Dobos tort, blushing pound cakes with the Harry's berries on the inside with cream, like all of these things. And why am I bringing this whole subject up other than, what was it?
I was asking, why pastry?
Why pastry? Why? Because that's just it. From one day to the next, I don't know what I'm doing. If you need me to do ice cream, I'm like, okay, let's do ice cream. If John and Vinnie call and say they want a cookie, or Apple called and they said they needed Ted Lasso cookies once, and that was 120,000 cookies in five days.
Shortbread cookies.
The shortbread cookies. I made them in 5 days and had them delivered all around town. So I love the science of it.
When
I
you
love
say
the
you made them
it.
In 5 days, you called up.
I went up. I didn't call them. I should have called those guys up. You know what I did? This is really one of the best stories of my entire career. Truly, it was in the middle of COVID. Actually, Hans Rockemagner called me and he said nobody wants to do it. They said they can't get it done. Would you think about doing it? He said, I've got a space. I took over the old La Brea space. It's empty right now. He said, and you can have it. So I walked into the...
This is La Brea Bakery.
The old La Brea on Washington that Hans now runs one of his production facilities out of. But it was empty at that point. So I walk in and all he had was 6 Revant rotating rack ovens and then a sample mixer on the side that we call it a tuning fork mixer. It's got 2 arms that go on the other
side.
Yeah,
I love those.
That's all he has.
Like one of these ones.
Yeah, use it for bread, right?
Because it like pulls, stretches the glutens or whatever.
They wanted a shortbread cookie.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like,
not going to work.
I can do it. I did it.
Of course
you did. But the reason this is a joke is that difficult is that this mixer is specifically made to build gluten.
Build gluten for your hands.
And a shortbread cookie is specifically, you're not supposed to have gluten built.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
It's the opposite idea.
So then what do you do? You start to think, okay, I need more of a cornstarchy flour. I don't want to use an AP that has a higher protein factor. I want to be able to soften all the structure, so I'm not going to use white sugar only. I'm going to use brown sugar in the recipe. I'm going to pre-melt my temperatures, time and temperature methodology. I got it done. Bottom line, we got it done.
Bottom 100,000 cookies later.
But you know what I did? I went up to a local school that was up the block, and I waited outside at 8:30 in the morning with some of my Delta cookies, the ones that were for John and Vinny. And I waited outside, and I said to the women, I said, what are you doing when you drop off your kids? And they said, nothing. School had just started back after COVID. And I said, would you like to, if you have the papers, come and meet me Monday morning. The line was around the corner. I paid everybody $20 an hour back then. This is 2 years ago. I said, I don't care if you're washing dishes. I don't care if you're rolling dough. I don't care if you're putting things in boxes. And we treated to lunch. And I had every Antonio Lafaso came for lunch and brought everybody lunch. Shirley Chung brought everybody for lunch. Highly unlikely. Everybody that were women chefs, I had them come and we paid them for lunch because it was during COVID. It was hard. And I said, Apple's going to pay. And I said to Apple, you want me to do this in such short order? This is what we're going to do. Yeah. We had a DJ. It was like honestly one of the best experiences ever. We worked our butts off for 6 days. And afterwards we had an award ceremony for everybody. And everybody got a little bonus. And everybody got little flowers. It was the best experience ever.
Wow.
So how do you make those things happen?
I love you so much.
Like, you got to be creative, right?
I love you so much.
Elizabeth came by. Filmed us. It's hysterical. It was hysterical.
I love you so much. And you talk about it like it's easy. Now, there's pastry chefs that just make cake. There's pastry chefs that just make laminated doughs like croissants and Danish. There's pastry chefs that just make ice cream.
Yeah.
So you do it all. Yeah. I do it all at about
five or six.
Every single thing. Bagels, for God's sakes.
Well, it's a New Yorker thing. You got to do that.
And I do think that we need to have, we should get like a text Sherry line. It's like it's like $3 for a simple question, $4.50 for a challenging question. If you're ever like the impossible is like $7.25 and you're like, my mixer's broken, you know, it's my wedding night, and you're just like, no problem, add a little bit of cornstarch, you'll be fine, honey.
I'll open up the back of the truck.
Who are you passing all this knowledge forward to? Who is your
Padawan.
Yeah, your mentee.
There have been so many of them.
You've
over
mentored
the years,
so
and I don't
many
even,
people.
I feel like they teach me now. We have my friend Zahar. She does Persian breads now.
Yeah.
She's amazing. There have been so many kids over the years. Jen Shen is the executive pastry chef for John and Vinny. Mm. And she was a line cook and then wound up being a sous chef. I mean, there's Katsy Guy Hamilton. We worked together. And there's so many of the kids out there that are. They're just continuing on and sharing. There's Suki Sam and Zaira Molina and Sixto Pocasangre and all of these guys and gals that they're there. They're out there. And often they're working with other people.
Yeah.
As they should.
Are there any bakers out there that you're like, I mean, I went to Zach the Baker in Miami recently. I like looked in such a beautiful display. Yeah. Are there bakeries in the world? Or that Cedric? You see that Cedric guy on
Cedric
the internet?
Yeah, yes.
Oh my God, those videos are so spectacular. Yeah. Is there anybody out there that you're like, not jealous of, but you're like, wow, this is somebody that's really...
Everybody! No, I love everyone. And I love the smallest little gelato shops. And I love little chocolate people that make little chocolate things. And there was a new bakery that just opened up from the local Rocco people. I don't know.
I got dandelion chocolates for an advent calendar this year.
Nice.
And it was one of the most beautiful things I've ever gotten. I mean, they're gorgeous. The most beautiful. Yeah.
And that's just it. I try not to just be only one because I think each Valrhona has the Ivoire is incredible. Michel Clouzel, their 99% infinity is the best. Cho Chocolate has Oat My God, and they're doing that all that vegan chocolate that's like surprisingly what? I just ate vegan. I fooled everybody. There was a chef conference, and I made it all vegan and made it all gluten free. And people are like, there's no
You did
no
the
way.
Folgers challenge. And
I made all different types of cookies, and everyone's like, it's impossible. I said, no, it's gluten free and it's vegan, everything that I did.
Okay.
Tourlami Butter. There's someone. Do you know Tourlami Butter? No. You should have her on. Susanna, she was a pastry chef all over in New York and then went over to Europe and worked with Renee Redzepi and all those guys, but she came back and she's vegan. She couldn't get good vegan butter. And she started her own vegan butter company. It's made with cacao.
Wow.
With coconut.
Did they treat the cows nicely?
The cacao. And so it's
made with
this
cocoa butter.
That's right. Part cocoa butter and other ingredients. And it's got this, it's stable and you cannot tell in the puff pastry that it's not.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What's the name of it?
Tourlami. Tourlami. Chef's Warehouse, everyone. Chef's Warehouse. Carries
and for the home consumer?
Online. Yeah, Tourlami butter.
Because
it's
I know
really
a lot of
special.
People who would embrace that.
Really special. And, you know, it's different than regular butter because you leave it at room temperature and butter will soften. This will melt in some cases, but that's okay. You just cream it up in the thing. And
when you talk about vegan butter, it reminds me last night for dinner, I had a bunch of chicken livers left over.
And I fried them up in
regular butter. But we didn't have any onions in my house.
Okay.
But I did have mortadella. And I diced up mortadella, and it was mayonnaise, mortadella, Hellman's mayonnaise, mortadella, and chicken livers, and I ate them with Ritz crackers.
What's vegan about that?
I'm just saying that that was very delicious.
As an aside.
I'm not a vegan person per se.
I love it.
I love my salmon, I love my bacon, I love all that stuff. Yep. When a product is really good, then you have to like sit up straight and go, you know what? I'll think about it.
It's worth using.
Some of these whipped creams too, Vitalife, and some of these creams that are out there. I said to Hannah, who is the recipient of the scholarship from CCAP, who's going to be doing the event for Nancy Silverton for CCAP on the 15th of May, on Friday. I said to her, let's fake everybody out.
Yeah.
Let's make it all vegan and gluten-free.
Do it.
Let's go for it. And she's okay. So we're going to work towards it and until we tweak. Might have nuts in it, so sorry.
Is the gluten-free thing something that has a... Is it something that's fun for you because it's a challenge? Or do you think it has a serious and important ongoing... Because you're a gluten person that built your career with gluten. So is it something that you've...
And there isn't a day that goes by that I don't walk into that little micro place pinhole that I drop off pastries in that someone just... Did you do anything gluten-free today?
So, but do you feel... I felt like the gluten-free kind of experience... I get very few people asking about gluten-free pizza. I'm really proud of our gluten-free pizza. Oh. And so in California, I thought we would sell a lot of it. You know, it's L.A., honey.
Yeah.
You know? But...
I think squeaky wheels get the oil when it comes to things like that. I opened up a theater right next to NIH, National Institutes of Health in Maryland. And I was like, you're going to have healthy food. So I put wraps and put all these other things inside there, and they never sold. So I think, you know, you hear a lot about it because it's something to talk about. I don't think, yes, in Los Angeles, there's a lot of people who do want to eat that way. I think, though, better that you, and if you don't have an allergy, that you eat once a week. Like your body.
Do you think your prediction is that in 10 years, the gluten-free thing will continue? Or do you think, yes, you do.
Well, there's some people with real allergies. I might have some people in my family with real, legit, like gluten allergies.
I'm actually wondering about the trend. Like, there's health and, you know, listen, pigeon was the most popular meat in America at the turn of the couple centuries ago.
I love squab.
But, you know, now it's not something that we think about that way. So, obviously, food trends are, you know, are constantly evolving. And gluten is one of the big ones.
I think because so much money has been put into it and because there are people that have allergies, that it's okay. That's what's going to happen. It will.
I don't want to run out of time.
We already ran out of time.
No, we didn't.
But really quick. So I was known as Miss Meringue in at Culinary Institute of America because I was so obsessed with meringue. And I learned that, you know, we've got... progrès, succès, these are all different types of French cakes.
Yes.
They were made with egg whites only because they were using the egg yolks to stabilize sauces and things like that. So it had all these egg whites left over.
So it was
you got japonais, you got progrès, sucre, marjolaine, all of these all came from that space.
I was so obsessed
by it that I didn't even realize by the time I started to express my own voice in a kitchen or with a menu, I had a lot of gluten-free in my world.
Right.
If you eat at a restaurant, souffles, right? If you eat at a restaurant in the beginning, they give you all this bread. So why do you want to eat bread on the back end?
Yes.
So it was just a natural progression to be...
Finishing
very light.
Yeah.
I think that you should write a cookbook called The Anthropology of Pastry. And it's just like, that's the other piece of the puzzle. I brought you a question about... you know, using one dough to do something else. And you were like, oh, you'd never do it because it doesn't have enough fat percentage. And then she thought for a second. She goes, well, no, there's a Bavarian. Well, no, in Northern Germany, they did something. And there's the Japanese flour that you could use. And it was like you remembered in
fascinated by history.
Scott novel, like you just like flashed
through every. Yeah.
I'm fascinated.
That's her. That's Sherry. You are.
Yay! Did we finish our champagne?
You are just leaving this legacy to the next generation, and you feel excited about them. We're asking a lot of our guests how you feel about the future of food. Obviously, we didn't even talk about your TV presence. You know, you do a lot of stuff on TV, and I think you influence a lot of people even just through talking about pastry. If we didn't have any pastry in front of us, just talking to you about pastry makes me want to learn more about it, makes me want to do more.
Hi! Yay!
Elizabeth is here!
Hi, how are you eating? Come on in!
Come on in. We're just wrapping it up.
We're drunk and full. It's a disaster.
So what's next? What is next for Sherry? Like, what is your next project, next thing you want to conquer, next... like, what is exciting you besides that muffin, which I can't wait to eat? You're just going to keep going. You're just going to keep going. I don't ever see you stopping.
I don't want to stop, honestly. I think there's still recipes that I'm not mastered,
yeah,
that I'm not happy enough with. You know, is there the perfect whatever? I think... Oh, here's an old name, Jeffrey Steingarten.
Remember Jeffrey? My God, of course I remember him.
So we had a debate over the perfect chocolate souffle. He thought my Kaiser Schmarrn was the perfect, quote-unquote, souffle, but a chocolate souffle, he felt like there was one in New York that was the best. And I said, no, it still hasn't been done yet. It's good.
The best chocolate souffle is still out there, is what you're saying.
It still hasn't even been done yet.
Because it's literally an oxymoron, right? What is it supposed to be? Deep, dark, decadent, which equals everything heavy, fudgy, da da da. And yet it's supposed to be light and you know, ethereal. I have this saying: if angels could bake, they'd make meringue.
That's true.
And so, I think that there still is yet to be the perfect.
So if you're out there and you have the best chocolate souffle. Present it to Sherry. Tell her where you are.
And I will tell
if you're
you
a good boy and you live a great life, one day when you pass away and you go to heaven, Sherry Yard will be God's pastry chef. So thank you for that. That's the reality.
The pastry angels. I'll be up there with the pastry
angels.
Wow.
I mean, I could talk to you all day. I don't want you to leave. Thank you for this spread. Thank you for your knowledge. Thank you for being here. I just want to spend more time inside of that brain of yours.
Come and visit us by the beach. We'll get a blanket.
I feel lucky to know you.
I'm lucky to
I feel
you.
Very lucky to
Aren't know we lucky to be in this golden age of food?
Yes.
We're so fortunate with the farmers and the people and what we can create. And we're just so blessed. So take advantage of it, right?
We are.
Appreciate your restaurants. Appreciate your people that are making your little... muffins.
Speaking of unleavened bread, happy Passover.
Happy Pesach.
Good Pesach.
Cheers. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Season 2 of On the Line was recorded in Santa Monica, California at Operation Podcast. Thanks, Chase.
Our engineer and editor is Matthew Donahue. Our theme song is an original composition by John DeLucci. Thanks, Chef.
On the Line is produced by Cindy Augustine. Our co-producer and publicist is Jesse Gerstein.
Our social media and marketing guru is Kedzie Teller.
Thanks for listening
to On the Line.